Mini episode 977 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
Okay, somebody get me Tom Michaels on the phone.
Tell me you didn't just do that, Sonny. Let me get this straight. In the span of one day, you have managed to burn through 3 years' worth of number one and number two picks. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I quit, Sonny.
Don't quit.
I can't coach a team that doesn't have a future, Sonny. That's the way it works.
I got Tom Michaels on the line.
Sonny, are we trading six?
Will everyone please just shut up? Don't quit. What? Just let me do my job. Don't quit now. If by the end of the night you still want to quit, then quit. Let's see what I do for you.
Your show.
Tom, it's Sonny.
Jesus, Mary, and whatnot.
Do I owe you a thank you, Weaver?
Thank you.
Jacksonville's on the clock, and I'm one more crazy shit show from insanity. Lord God, let that infant John Carson screw this up.
It's Jeff Carson, Tom, and he doesn't have the pick. I do. I just made a trade with Jacksonville. I'm on the clock. It's me.
Bullshit.
The Jacksonville Jaguars have made a trade. The Cleveland Browns now have the sixth pick and are on the clock.
I'm going to pick Bo, Tom, unless you want him more, and if so, let's make a deal.
We still have Bo Callahan?
All right, you've done your due diligence. You're about to pull off the move of the century, but you need my pick to do it, so make me an offer. Make me a deal, Tom, at six, and you get your boy Wonder.
What do you want?
I want my number ones back, all of them.
That's crazy. Why would I give them back?
Because at the end of the day, no one's the wiser, Tom. You haven't lost anything, and you get the quarterback Messiah you've always wanted for $7 million less.
You take him. You obviously don't want to. I'll stick with my draft.
Yeah, but you want him, Tom, don't you? Seahawks fans want a hero, and you denied him.
Not that bad.
Don't lie to me. Ever since you traded away Callahan, the barbarians are at the gate.
I don't care about that.
Yeah, you do. You and I both know it. I have the golden ticket now, Tom, and if I give it to you, you get to save Seahawk football in Seattle.
Give you number two picks.
No. No, I want my picks back, all of them. I want all 3 years of this team's future back.
That's not fair.
Well, you want to cry about it, Tom, or you want to make a little magic before the clock runs out on both of us? Okay, screw it. No more offer. It's off the table, Tom. I'm taking Callahan.
Whoa, no. Wait. Right, you have a deal.
Give me your picks. We have a deal.
What else do we need?
Special teams. Putney. Get Putney.
Yeah.
David Putney.
Putney.
Yeah. I'm sorry. That deal's now off the table.
What?
We live in a different world than we did just 30 seconds ago.
What do you want now?
I want my picks back, and I want David Putney.
Where'd that come from?
It doesn't matter. I want all my picks back, and I want David goddamn Putney just because I feel like it.
You're out of your mind.
Yeah, I am. Haven't I proved that already? You make this deal right now, Tom, and you get Bo Callahan. Say it with me. Come on, Tom. Say it with me, you pancake-eating motherfucker.
All right, shit. Deal.
And welcome back to G and H's Combine Review Show. We've made our way through the quarterback, running back, wide receiver, defensive line, and edge rusher groups, which leaves us with maybe the most intriguing group of this draft, which is the defensive secondary. Now, in case you're not paying attention, here are the cliff notes. There are two safeties at the top. One, 99.9% of the world believe is all-world, game-changing, elite, can't-miss prospect. I am not one of those people. And then you've got another guy who I think is exactly what I just described, but he has a different name. Of the corners, there are two guys at the top. One of them is falling, and that makes me very happy. But the guy at the top who will be the guy at the top and will continue to be the guy at the top is Denzel Ward of Ohio State, who ran a 4.32 40, and is widely considered to have the best cover skills of any corner, regardless of that 40 time. That being said, let me just throw this out there right now. We mentioned Sherman at the top of the draft being the reason why people like big corners. And I, as the fan of a team that I'm the fan of, am tired of small corners. I don't care if Denzel Ward is Darrell Revis reincarnate. I don't want a single corner under 6 foot. That being said, that gets us to number two, which is Josh Jackson of Iowa, who led FBS in interceptions. Now, he may be a ball hawk, or maybe he's just a guy that's in the right place at the right time. He did not run a very good 40. It was in the high 4.4s, low 4.5s, and he is starting to slide down boards a little bit. And the reason for that is if Ward is at the top, the next guy not named Josh Jackson is probably going in the top half of the second round. So if Josh Jackson just is a right place, right time guy, maybe he's not worth going to the top 10. So he's falling a little bit. Jair Alexander out of Louisville made himself some money in the combine by showing that his cover skills are only matched by his athleticism. And then we've got a plethora of big guys. Carlton Davis, Tavares McFadden, who might have had the second worst combine to only Orlando Brown. So he'll fall a little bit. So if you like corners, if you need corners, and in my particular case, the Browns definitely need corners, I think any team out there could possibly get two starting caliber corners in the draft and not have to spend a first-round pick doing it. Another guy I really like, and feel free to point out bias if you'd like, is J.C. Jackson out of Maryland. 6'5", I think 6'1", 220. Really good, talented player. Got into a little bit of trouble off the field, but the good news is that he was acquitted of all of that stuff. So, that being said, getting into my Minka Fitzpatrick thing. I do not believe that he is the end-all, be-it to the free safety position, and that's because I don't even know if he's going to play free safety. As far as the tape goes, I watched the tape. Yes, he's a good player. He is a very good at everything, excellent at nothing kind of guy. He's got a good football IQ. He's got decent athleticism. But to me, he just looks like a good safety at a good program. He does not jump off the screen to me. Derwin James, however, jumps off the screen. Derwin James is 6'3", 218 pounds or something like that. He ran exactly 1/100th of a second slower than Minka Fitzpatrick. And when we look at the production, they are virtually the same down the line with the exception of tackles, where Derwin James literally is twice the player that Fitzpatrick is. So, as Cleveland needs a free safety, assuming that the corner from Green Bay doesn't transition over to free safety, which we're hearing a little buzz about today, I really think that if they're going to go free safety, it's got to be Derwin James. But like I said, I am almost in a group of one when it comes to that, for what I can tell.
Well, make that a group of two, because I would take James over Fitzpatrick. You've sold me on this, and I think, again, with Fitzpatrick, it's the projection here of what he can be. Again, as somebody who got moved around a decent amount in that defense, but is this somebody who is going to be a cornerback? Is he going to be best used at cornerback, whether it be in the slot or on the outside, or at free safety? Versus, you don't have to project anything with Derwin James. He's a free safety. You see what he is and what he can do. And one of the very valuable pieces in the NFL, as we've seen over a period of time, is certainly in the last generation, somebody like an Ed Reed. But essentially anybody that can be out there in center field and really being a term that I like to use in a lot of different ways, is a force multiplier. And that's the kind of thing that I thought Ha-Ha Clinton Dix was potentially going to do when he went to Green Bay. And we saw it for one game against Seattle in the NFC Championship game a couple of years ago, the one where Seattle almost got beat at home. He was in that game, he showed what he can be, and he hasn't shown enough of that other times there. But that's one of these things that, again, like in the military parlance of force multiplying and making everyone else around you better and more effective versus Fitzpatrick. I'm going to give this to you, Jason, in terms of, I'm going to go back to Lindy's again. What they like best about him is his intangibles. He comes with off the chart. It's off the charts grades in toughness, leadership, and dedication, to which I say, does that merit a top five overall pick? I think not. Party of two, Jason, on Derwin James over Micah Fitzpatrick.
Well, and look, I don't want to discredit the kid. Clearly, he's one of these leadership guys. He's the guy that's going to come into the locker room right away. His presence will be felt. He'll be respectful but forceful. He'll be all about getting on top of it, being in the film room, really being prepared, and all that's great. But when it comes down to it, the draft is a fickle mistress. And the fact of the matter is, I am not taking a slot corner, and I don't care how good he is, in the top 10.
Right.
I'm just not doing that. And if you're telling me that he's all these things, except ultimately he's going to play slot corner because he likes to blitz, yeah, then let somebody else pick him. When it comes to free safety, especially on a team like the Browns that are looking to get one early, or even, you know, maybe a Tampa Bay, who seem to be sort of the safety equivalent of the Browns at quarterback over there, if they're going to do it, let them do it, because he's a good football player. He'll make an impact. I just don't think it's worth that kind of draft capital. Now, Rick, if we could transition ever so slightly.
Sure.
Because you are in the hotbed of Ohio State country, I want to get a straightforward analysis of someone I know that actually watches the games and knows what they're looking for. Is the draft projection that Denzel Ward is likely to go in the top 10, is that market value? Is that us bumping him, assuming he's better than he is? Or is someone going to get an actual value pick if he's taken in the top 10?
I think it kind of depends on how you look at it. And I'm looking at it the same way that you are, which I think is the accurate way to look at it. Versus, again, you have to look at what is the value of a slot corner. And I'm not saying that's necessarily his ceiling. I'm not saying you can't put him on the outside. But to go back to your previous point about him, 5'10", 191 was what he was projected at least at one point in his measurements, I should say, measured instead of projected. But in looking at that, again, this is one of these things where, granted, not every quarterback can make the over-the-shoulder throws, but you're taking that off the table in terms of your ability to defend against that. And that is what has given sort of a second breath to the career of somebody like a DRC in the pros, the bigger cornerbacks out there. Seattle with the Legion of Boom, they were kind of showing it a couple of years ago on what the bigger cornerbacks can do to be disruptive. So somebody like a Ward, you can take him, you can project him, yeah, top 10, top 15, he could very well go in there. But I think, again, that would be teams getting sort of blinded by the physical upside and the tools that he has, and not looking enough at a real-world projectability kind of a thing where, you know, you can't take him and put him on a Mike Evans, for example. Right. So if you can't do that, why are you going to spend a top 10 or 15 pick on him?
Well, and I think that is really my hesitation on it. Look, it's not like I don't like Ohio State players. I do, as long as they're not quarterbacks. I do like Ohio State players. I think they crank out NFL talent left and right. If I'm taking corner in the top 10, and as a team that just recently traded away Joe Hayden, who was taken in the top 10, I'd like to remind everyone that if you take a corner in the top 10, it better be Darrell Revis, it better be Patrick Peterson, it better be someone that tests well and has tape to follow. So, if he's one of these guys that's going to be great at something but isn't a jack of all trades in that regard, then I'm probably not excited to take him in the top 10. Now, you mentioned something interesting with the slot side of things, the big corners and slot. If we go away from the number one guy, it's safe to assume, short of Jair Alexander, every other corner that will be taken in the top 10 of corners are all big, which presents an interesting question, because there was a guy that I would have, before the combine, considered taking maybe in the back end of the first round, and that is Tavarius McFadden out of Florida State. Tavarius McFadden is a solid 6'2", 220 pounds and change. And the thing is, when you watch him on tape, if I want a slot corner, that's who I want. I want someone that on tape plays and gets after it. Here's the thing. He ran almost a 4.6 40. So even at that size and even at that sort of niche position, I really don't think he's going to go anywhere near the first round. So if the idea is Minka Fitzpatrick's going to be your slot corner and he's going to be great, I would still rather you take Denzel Ward or trade down and go some other way and maybe get a Carlton Davis or Jair Alexander, who's also only 5'10". And then go get a guy like Tavares McFadden, who can get in there and can defend at least the short to intermediate stuff for a Mike Evans or a big body wide receiver, or even could potentially in sub packages handle tight ends. But the thing is with that one, value. I'm not taking him at 4-6. I'm not taking that guy in the first two rounds. So again, defensive secondary has options. Now, the question is, the Browns are not alone in being a team that would like to get two starting corners. So, Rick, you're just shooting from the hip. Your impression, within the feasibility of being able to draft, and this isn't fantasy, so I'm not saying you get to pick 33 and 34, but if you can pick two guys in the second, third, and fourth rounds, do you feel like those are going to be potential starters, contributors, or depth if you're trying to get two of them?
I think potential starters. I think you can sort of set your expectations accordingly. And somebody like Tavares McFadden, I want to touch upon him for a little bit because I think he's sort of an interesting microcosm of one of the subsets of this whole player development process, something that's kind of a conundrum here. A guy who's 2017 wasn't nearly as good as his 2016, much like the man that I have a man crush on, Sam Darnold, as we discussed before. And this is one of these things where it becomes a sort of a tough matter to discern here on, is this somebody getting exposed the second year that he's sort of been figured out, or is it simply didn't have a great year, may have stalled in the development of his game. In the case of McFadden, as you said, didn't test very well here. So, again, maybe the fitness wasn't necessarily the best relative to what it was in 2016. Now, that could lead to other questions as well, as we said, in terms of Orlando Brown. Like, if your fitness wasn't good coming into the combine, what the hell's wrong with you? Is this going to be a concern? Need we be thinking about, is this guy going to be having the dedication to stay up with his craft? So trying to figure out when a guy falls off the year that he comes out as opposed to what he was the year before, that's one of the most difficult puzzles that we face here. I look at the upside of 2016, though, and again, you have to be confident about your situation. And the one thing, and again, much like all good football fans everywhere, I'm not a fan of the New England Patriots, but you got to give the devil their due in terms of organizational know-how, things that they do. Belichick's always got an eye for guys who have a rap but may not be as bad of a person as what the rap says, if that makes any kind of a sense here. People who may have a bad rap but are coachable and adaptable in their circumstances. If you're very comfortable with what you have and that you have a system where you can demand the most out of it, and I actually don't know if the Browns have that right now, so I'm not advocating for the Browns to take him because it's an open question on what they have in terms of the coaching there right now. Greg Williams is a genius, but he's also a Billy Martin type, and he burns out very quickly in the different jobs here, so that would be my sort of concern. Also, Greg Williams sort of engaged in a little bit of throwing the players under the bus, not to the degree that Hugh Jackson did with his disgraceful kind of crap that should have gotten him fired late in the season, where he was more or less complaining about what he had to work with. But again, I'm not sure the Browns are the team. I'm not sure they have the solidity to take a chance on McFadden, because I'm not sure their team can get the most out of him. But if you're a team that is in that position and you have that confidence, boy, that guy could pay off for you.
Well, and this brings up another interesting point. Maybe, you know, when you're looking at a team that doesn't have the greatest track record of developing players, that if you're a fan of one of those other teams, from Patriots down into, say, the as we approach the bottom third, if you are the Packers, the Ravens, the Steelers, the Seahawks, the Rams even, believe it or not, we're saying that, then maybe this is one of those things where you can look into McFadden and say, that's that piece of our secondary that solidifies everything, gives us a little flexibility, and we can work with them. But I agree with you, as much as it pains me to say, when it comes to teams like the Browns, the Jaguars, the Lions, the Bills even, while two of those teams I just mentioned were in the playoffs, they aren't exactly known for developing players, and if you're a fan of those teams, you're probably less likely to be excited about someone that you have to trust your front office, coaching, and developmental departments are going to be able to get them right where they need to be. And yeah, for those of us on the brown and orange side, yeah, not crazy about that.
Jason, let me put this to you as far as McFadden goes. Could there be a better spot for him right now than the Broncos? You look at the new starters that they have at cornerback, Wade Phillips as defensive coordinator. Is there a better landing spot anywhere in the league for a guy like that right now? I don't think so.
Well, probably not. They've committed to Chris Harris Jr., who, believe it or not, he's not a household name, but according to Football Focus, has been the most efficient cornerback in the last 5 years. So he's there. They did move Tlaib. They are going to pull, what's his face? The corner from Ohio State.
Yeah, I know you're talking about that. I know Tremaine Johnson's going to be going, but they have replaced him.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's that spot to get that third corner or your nickel corner, slot corner. It would absolutely be a good spot. And after Denver, wets the bed on Kirk Cousins and reaches for a quarterback that they probably don't like, then maybe by the time they get into the second and third round, that would be a very exciting option. Now, we're going to try something here real quick because I just want to hear Rick's reaction. Rick and I spoke at length about a number of subjects last night just for the fun of it, and this was not one of them. And I don't know if Ricardo even knows about this, so we're going to see if this is going to work, and I'm looking for unsolicited reaction.
What I'm saying, Fitzpatrick and a guy like Derwin James, they don't need nobody to be successful. They're going to be successful no matter what situation you place them in.
Troy Ashby.
Oh, man, he can run.
Why are you surprised, Dan?
Well, you know why I'm surprised. I can't say it on TV, but he...
Okay, so for those that didn't watch the all the way through to the middle of the defensive backs, there is a marginally talented safety out of Penn State. I'm going to butcher his name, but all I know is Troy Apke, I believe is what it is. And for those watching at home that don't have the luxury to see what we just saw, he's white. And he ran a 3.5. And let's cut through it. Let's call what this is. Mike Mayock is a very respectable analyst. Bucky Brooks is a former scout who I would march into the fires of hell if he told me to. Daniel Jeremiah was a scout for the Baltimore Ravens. These are men that go into the combine not well-versed, but familiar with everyone they're going to look at. There's not a name they mispronounce. There's not a name where they go, yeah, I got me. I got nothing. Right. They go in knowing a little bit, if not a lot, about everyone that's in the combine. Deion Sanders is NFL royalty, and Deion Sanders is not going to put a whole lot of work into anything. Deion Sanders, in his time as a broadcaster, has never come across as being some guy that's doing his own homework. And I'm not giving the guy any grief. I'm just saying, don't be surprised when he sees somebody he's not familiar with or didn't know that Troy Apke comes from a track background and absolutely was going to run fast. But look, in this world we live in, in race relations being what they are and people choosing to get upset about anything, let me say this right now. If you saw that and treat it as anything other than television comedy, then you need to reassess your whole life. That is just good fun, and I don't care. White guy who's not fast, love it. There's a white guy that's fast. So what? The last time we had one of these, his name was Jason Sehorn, who had a very solid career. But so what? he's good at a few things. Right. Maybe he's a solid safety. I'll be honest, I have not seen a lot of tape on him. I've heard that he's really good at covering tight ends, to whatever that's worth. But I just thought that it was a nice little way to put a bow on the whole combine, to see Deion Sanders almost laughing at the idea that he was unaware that there was a white guy that could run sub-4.4s.
Well, Jason, I'll tell you what, man. It's one of these things where this is something that's common across sports. The sports royalty part of the broadcasting booth here, guys who are like the megastars, Hall of Famers at their position, they're the ones, quite frankly, that coast the most on stuff here because they know that they can. They're not there for their preparation. They're not there to sort of, you know, get deep into the X's and O's. I mean, all you got to do is, when it comes time, we're almost there for March Madness, look at Barkley in the studio. You know, when he's asked to comment on college guys that he's never heard of, like, the power forward for the South Carolina team was terrible. That guy was just bricking shots left and right. Like, Barkley broadcasts to you blatantly that he doesn't know and doesn't care what he's talking about. So this is just sort of par for the course with the superstar players turning broadcasters, Jason.
Well, and, you know, I am very passionate about what I'm about to say. And those that know me will understand why, especially if, like, Rick and Ricardo and Damon later can attest to, as they've been in those trenches with me. I have a big problem with professional athletes who have played their career, are worth millions, and decide, hey, I'm going to go talk about it for a living.
Jay Cutler.
None of these people we're talking about, I assure you, ran through the alphabet with a pencil between their teeth. I guarantee you none of them stood up in front of a chroma key and did the, ooh, pressure system coming in from the... No, none of them have done that. And when they go in there and they half-ass it, it is offensive to me, and it's offensive to anyone else who's been through the rigors of what it takes to get to that point. And I'm calling you out, Alfred Williams. Get used to it right now. You heard it here first. Anytime you say something stupid, I'm going to come after you. Because Alfred Williams is probably the worst offender of all of them. He didn't even attempt to fix his non-regional diction, but we'll get past that. This is going way too far down the nerdy broadcaster role. But yeah, let's be honest. I love LaDainian Tomlinson. From our fantasy background, when we get into fantasy sports, LaDainian Tomlinson, I even said on a show with you, Rick, years ago, that LaDainian Tomlinson is the first overall pick in fantasy football until further notice. So he's got a special place in my heart. He's a horrible broadcaster. Darren Sharper, before they put him in prison, he was a horrible broadcaster. You know what I have a lot of respect for? And this is going to sound like it's race-driven, but it's not. When Troy Aikman retired and when Kurt Warner retired, there was a period of time where they were just missing. No one knew where they were. No one heard anything. And then all of a sudden, oh, Troy Aikman's going to do, you know, the NFC play-by-play or color analyst for the broadcast. And then you go, okay, great, here we go. Another star athlete is going to try his hand. It's basically like basketball players trying to be rappers. Like, pick one. Not everybody's good at everything. But Troy Aikman was very good. Tony Romo, surprisingly, is very good.
I was about to say Romo, yeah.
And then, you know, you get guys like Kurt Warner who are very solid. There is a guy I forget. Oh, Charles Davis of NFL Network. Phenomenal. Now, he's not a star player. He had a career in the NFL.
Jeff Saturday's
not bad. Our own Marshall Erath out here is also not bad. Mm-hmm. But the commonality is all of them, regardless of what level of sport they were good at, they all devoted themselves to the craft, and you can tell when you watch them. So that being said, that's me doing my whole get off my lawn thing. But so with that being said, Rick, we've talked about the draft, talked about the combine specifically, highlighted a fair number of players, and now I'm going to do something really quick, and I'm not giving you any notice, and I just want you to shoot from the hip here. Okay, sure. I'm just going to run through a quick. We'll see if I get to 10. I might not be able to get to 10. We'll do at least the top 5. Right now, the draft happens today. Knowing what you know today, and I'm going to steal your thunder a little bit, Rick, because you proposed an idea last night that I'm all for, and at this point, I almost don't even care what it takes to make it happen. I think it'll only take 35, but Cleveland, at 1, takes Sam Darnold, and they don't hesitate. They won't sit on the clock for very long. Then they will have traded 4-2 with New York, and using Rick's own words against him, they're going to go to the Giants and say, we are taking Barkley at 1, so just get over it. We are not. There's no chance you're going to get him. So now that you know that, we want 2 to secure our quarterback. Which will then make them go, sure, okay, give us 35 overall. We'll give you two, and we'll drop down to four. Not a whole lot moves.
I think it'll take two twos, by the way.
Oh, that'll make me a little upset. But, okay, if it's 35 and 64, I can at least be convinced. So they will actually make that trade before the draft starts, and they will go, just to piss the Giants off, they'll go Darnold 1, Barkley 2, Chubb, Bradley Chubb, the number one edge rusher out of North Carolina State, will go to Indianapolis because they have no kind of pass rush. Which brings us back to the Giants at 4. Giants have an atrocious offensive line. I don't think that the fans of the Giants are going to love this. But as of right now, unless something changes, I don't see anything between 4 through 6 that is not a quarterback that they're going to want. And here's a newsflash for you. The typical narrative is the Giants are going to take Rosen because they want the heir apparent to Eli Manning. Yet I go back to week 16, I think it was, when their half-ass of a coach decided to bench Eli in favor of a backup nobody gives a damn about in the effort to save his job. And here's the fun part. The front office and ownership said, okay, tread lightly. This is Eli Manning we're talking about.
Right.
Don't do something stupid. He did something stupid. The very next day, he was fired. The ownership has recommitted to Eli Manning. My theory is that they are not going to go quarterback at all, or they're not going to go quarterback early, because they're going to try to do things to maximize the time they have left with Eli as they've recommitted to him. So I think they're going to go Quentin Nelson, if it happens today, the offensive guard from Notre Dame. At 5... And here, since we're talking trades, this is where Denver is getting very frustrated, because this entire time they've been fighting tooth and nail to get up into, you know, the 2 or 3 range, because I think there's a quarterback that they like. I don't necessarily think it's the quarterback that I'm going to give them, but at 5, knowing that they couldn't trade up, not that they needed to anyway in this scenario, I think John Elway is going to take the guy that's most ready, even if he's not the best prospect, and take Josh Rosen just to see if he can win before he walks away. And then at 6, we've got the Jets, who are either going to take Allen or Mayfield. I'm going to say it's the New York Jets being the New York Jets, and they're going to take Mayfield. Which brings us to Tampa Bay, who I think probably takes Minka Fitzpatrick at that point and is happy to do so. 8 is San Francisco. I think that's where probably Denzel Ward goes, just so they can lock up that back end and start to fill in the gaps. And then last, Oakland Raiders at 10. I think they're going to probably reach and take someone like Roquan Smith from Georgia. So if you can, Rick, give me at least a top 5 as you see it if it happened today.
Top 5. I think the Browns in the top spot here. I think it's a little bit of a smoke screen. Maybe this is optimism here, but I'm going to say Darnold at 1. I think Barkley at 2 to the Giants. The Colts are going to get a lot of trade offers, but I think it could be persuasive that they stay with Chubb at 3. You get to 4 with the Browns. They're going to be getting a lot of trade offers there, but I'm just going to go chalk that they take Minka Fitzpatrick, whether you and I like it or not. In that spot, I'll say Denver taking Josh Rosen at 5. And as we're sort of going full circle on this thing here, Jason, and everything we've talked about today, I'll just say that an admonition to all teams in the draft process is that there's a fine line between being clever and between being ill-advised, as perhaps I potentially crossed that line in harshing on Charles Barkley before, and thus potentially ending the string of Ernie Johnson appearances on the FDH lounge. That may prove to be my bad.
Well, we will do what we can to make sure that only gets to those that want to see it. Hey, would not be the first time, right? At some point in our process, we'll bring Rick back so that he and I can share with you the story as to why Matthew Berry, ESPN's lead fantasy football analyst, is afraid of me. At some point, we'll get to that. So, Rick, I definitely want to thank you for coming on. We did have a little bit of audio issues. We'll clean that up next time, and then we will get what we can out. We'll disperse that out to the various social media and websites that we are in partnership with. And then, Rick, unless something comes up before then, I've got you penciled in to be a part of our live draft coverage when the NFL draft comes around. And then, of course, we've got the NBA draft as well. Rick, the proprietor of FDH Fantasy Draft Help and all of its subsidiaries, we appreciate you for coming on, and we will continue to bring you on and continue to promote the product.
Well, Jason, I thank you very much. It's very exciting to be here as part of your new project. And again, you have had a lot to do with the building of the FDH Lounge at FantasyDraftHelp.com as my partner, as our senior editor, and I look forward to working together these entities as we move forward here. Very exciting. You've got a very talented crew of people that you're working with out there, and I look forward to all the intersections to come. Very exciting times, my friend.
All right. Well, Rick Morris of the Fantasy Draft Help and the FDH Lounge will be continuing to promote that stuff, and I guarantee you it'll be some of the most entertaining consumption that you have. So, Rick, I do appreciate it, and we will talk to you soon.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, All Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Aquafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.